You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Do not adjust your devices. We are coming to you just a couple of days after our last episode. Joining me via Skype once again is my friend Michael Leboff. Mike, are you ready for some Islanders West Coast hockey action?
Oh yeah, it's the best. I wish I did it more often, but it's
Jimmy's
it's
ready too.
Yeah, Jimmy's ready. We timed it perfectly, but. Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to stay up late and be disappointed right before I go to bed.
That's the way to do it. That's awesome. Well, joining us from the West Coast to tell us all about that and other Islanders goings on is our friend Arthur Staple of The Athletic. Art, how's it going?
It's good. I'm also ready to stay up late and be disappointed, but I'll actually be here watching it.
Hey, for you, the games will end pretty early. You can have the rest of your night to yourself, which is pretty cool. But yeah, these games are always a fun mix of, hey, they always play well against these teams. And then like, oh man, I stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning to watch that. But, let's start with, Saturday's game in Nashville, Western Conference team, not necessarily West Coast team. That game was a lot more like the Islanders' first game of the season in Carolina, in the sense that they did not play particularly well. The first period was awful. They kind of redeemed themselves in the second and then just got shut out basically by a much better team in the third. It might be too early to ask this question, but do you have a sense of like how this version of the team is going to tackle adversity like that as opposed to the last version of the team?
I mean, I think talking to some of the guys, and obviously we qualify all of this with, it's still very early, not just in the season, but in Barry Trotz's tenure as coach. So I think, just listening to some of the longtime Islanders who are not trying to directly criticize anybody that came before Barry Trotz, but are saying this guy exudes a real calm atmosphere on the bench. He and his assistants have been around the block a lot. They've been around the block a lot together in very high pressure situations. So it definitely has a different feel. So I would imagine that they'll be able to rebound. Trotz really believes in what he's teaching them, and he knows it's going to take some time. So I don't think there's going to be the feeling of panic day by day that kind of set in about December of last season.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah, it's funny. In the article you wrote today about the fourth line being reunited, there was one quote from Cal Clutterbuck that stuck out to me that was a lot like what you were just saying, which is basically what I have it here. You know, we had a lot of guys. Oh, here, when you throw in a team system that lends itself to everyone being successful, playing fast, looking fast, that's good for everyone. We had a lot of guys who looked like they were having bad years last year who weren't bad players. It's just different. We're in a system that works cohesively, not individually. And I was like, wow, that's like you said, he's not directly calling anybody out, but he kind of is. But you get a sense from the players that they feel it's different too. Like it really is a different kind of vibe in the locker room.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. It definitely, when the first day of training camp, really, it wasn't like a conditioning test or something where they're, you know, the new coaching staff had to assert themselves by making guys do what would appear to be sort of needless things because they're all pro athletes and almost all of them come into camp in good shape. It was hard work. It was a lot of one-on-one battle drills. It was a lot of, there was no yelling. There was just a lot of commanding talk. And I just saw a lot of faces in the locker room afterwards that were kind of like, you know, kind of like a weary smile of like, oh, like that's what that is about. That's right. When you have a Stanley Cup winning coach who's been in the league for 20 years, that's how you're supposed to work. And that's the level that he expects. So it's, I think it has been different from day one. And, you know, I think it's pretty evident they've really only been completely outclassed by Nashville twice and a little bit by Carolina. Both of them are off to really good starts. So it's hard to really get a sense, but this is not a team that's very talented. They are a veteran team, and I think they're expected to pick the stuff up and play to a certain level and hope for good defense, good goaltending, and some wizardry from their few skilled players. So, you know, I think the blueprint is in place. It's just a matter of whether they can do it night in and night out.
Yeah.
There's a great quote in that Trotz gave about that I never thought of, and I could guarantee you that probably the two former coaches never thought about how he was matching two lines against the other team's top lines so that the other team couldn't pick up his cadence, which I was like, damn, like he's thinking about this game on a completely different level from basically anybody on in this organization has ever thought about it since Arbor.
Yeah, he is, you know, he's a very easygoing guy and accessible, and he explains a lot well to us idiot reporters who then can in turn explain it well to the fans. But just he's supremely confident in what he does. I think it's just, you know, years and years of doing it to some quick success in Nashville with a team that was probably less talented than this one, even though it was 20 years ago. And then harnessing the wild, you know, skill of the guys in Washington to obviously the greatest heights that organization ever achieved. So, yeah, I think he knows what he's doing, and he knows what he's doing. So he's not going to waver from it. And it is impressive to hear him talk that way in a very plain sense where there's not a lot of subtext to it. And I think the players are getting that's that as
cool. Well. No, it's good to hear. Yeah, the press conferences, I mean, we always want to listen to them because we just want to hear what they have to say. But I don't I never look forward to the other ones as much as I look forward to hearing Trotz because, like you said, he puts things in plain English and you can understand it. And there's no like, you know, it's almost as if he's never read Isle's Twitter. Go figure. You know, like he doesn't kind of like, you know, dive into almost like, you know, fan the fires of the Twitter rage machine all day. And it's nice. It's a nice change of pace. That's good. One thing though, it's funny. And I mean, I totally get what you're saying, like that there's a different vibe in there. One, which is funny because, you know, you and I were just talking about this before we came on that they signed Steven Gionta basically in an emergency capacity, which is like the most Islanders thing to do, even though everybody is kind of new. But they did that a little differently too, because he's on waivers and he's apparently going to just go back to Bridgeport. So Casey Cizikas is expected to play Wednesday. And then Gionta will be, I guess he'll definitely clear. And then they'll just send him back to Bridgeport when they come back. Is that sort of the plan?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the hesitation that most fans felt, that little gasp that they exuded when they saw that Gionta was signed, is because in past years, that tryout guy who was signed would end up playing 40 right. or 50 games. And that may still happen here. I think a lot would have to happen for that to occur. But I think they really viewed it as a short-term stopgap, a way to get Gionta onto the roster without having to do any juggling. And now he can be waived and go down and play in Bridgeport, where they're kind of, they're certainly not NHL veteran shy. They've got a lot of guys that they've got to rotate through their lineup because you're only allowed to use a certain number of NHL veterans in an NHL lineup. But obviously for the amount that he'll play, he's going to be a guy that, you know, does the Gionta family stuff, lead by example, all that good stuff. So I think there's some harmony between Lamoriello and Trotz here, where Lamoriello's instincts, which have not really proven to be so great in terms of signing guys so far in the couple months he's been on the job, but also balanced with Trotz, who has a very clear idea of what he needs from his lineup and is not really going to waver from it because the GM says, yeah, we're signing this guy and you're going to
keep him. I mean, Lucas Pisa, the guy who was like, he was basically the designated whipping boy before the season even started. You know, he played a couple of games and he hasn't been seen since. And I'm sure he's going to play again at some point. But that to me was a telling sign that things are different. Like, you know, previous coaches who shall remain nameless would have played that guy into the ground and, you know, everybody would have been screaming and yelling for them. But it was pretty obvious that he hadn't played all that. I mean, okay, they signed him still, but I think, like you said, Trotz has an idea of what he wants and he wasn't getting it. So he sat the guy and Scott Mayfield was in and eventually, again, Spezza will be back. But, you know, I think so. We all just have to kind of like take the Trotz train and just, you know, enjoy the ride because this guy does kind of know what he's doing. And we haven't had that before in a very, very long time. What's the deal? I mean, with this schedule, though, you know, I watched that game on Saturday and obviously the Islanders were extremely outclassed by a very, very good team, an elite team. But I wonder if this like crazy schedule has, you know, not to give them excuses, has ruined them a little bit too. Like, have you ever seen anything like this where a team plays once in 9 days? That's kind of ridiculous. I mean, that and not being an all-star break, that's kind of ridiculous.
It is a little ridiculous. It's usually, you know, October is usually jam-packed for the Islanders and not necessarily with a lot of home games. But yeah, it's you know, I think, you know, whether it's the World Cup a couple of years ago condensing the schedule, when they've had Olympics condensing the schedule, we're not used to seeing all this time off, even with in the era of the 5-day CBA mandated break, which apparently everyone's going to get at the same time this year in January. So I think there's going to be a couple of scenarios like this throughout the year for teams where they just sort of have very few games in a long space of time. And you probably hope for it to be further along in the schedule when your guys are more banged up. But as it happens now, akin to, you know, apropos of what I wrote today, Kasus Zekas was the one who was banged up during this kind of long stretch off. And they kind of need Kasus Zekas right now. So it's probably an okay thing that they only went one game without him. And not many more, I guess, is the plan. But yeah, it's definitely a strange schedule and takes a little getting used to. But I think that's another aspect of Barry Trotz has been around the block a lot. He's seen all different schedules and travel and doing all this different kind of stuff, working in the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference before. So I don't think it phases a lot of the guys around there.
I think a couple of the other teams had, like, I was looking at the standings, I guess maybe Saturday or something, and I saw that the Lightning had just played like two games. And so I don't know what it is, but the NHL will never, like, you know, I feel like if the NBA gives it a reason, they'll be like, yeah, we're starting the season early because of so-and-so and so-and-so. Whereas the NHL is just like, here's the schedule, make of it as you may. And we'll probably tweak it.
I know the Devils
were
in Europe because I noticed they had only played two games and I was like, oh wait, they were in like Switzerland and Sweden. So they have an excuse, but the Islanders don't have an excuse. they just got this awful, weird schedule, which is a little bit strange. I guess speaking of the schedule and speaking of the home games, you know, have you gotten the sense that these guys are relieved that they're going to have to play fewer games in Brooklyn this year than ever? And then they're going to be going back to the Coliseum. That was a huge thing last year. Like, oh, the players want it. They're going to play more games back there. But, you know, the first part of the season is mostly in Brooklyn. But now things are starting to leak out like it's a problem and they didn't like it. They don't like the commute. Is there a relief there too that they're kind of done with this place a little bit, much as Barclays Center seems to be done with the Islanders?
I mean, they're not completely done because they still have the Coliseum too, but that's, you know, can never really be rid of this crazy marriage. But yeah, it was always an issue, and they made the best of it because they happened to be the first 2 years in Brooklyn. They were really good in Brooklyn. And I think that sort of alleviated a little bit. But when we got into last season and the Tavares situation was starting to, you know, bubble up a little bit more, it was a lot more obvious. The conversations that were had much more behind the scenes and very off the record started to creep closer to on the record about how much the guys didn't like it. And headlining that was how much Tavares didn't like it, which of course meant that most everyone else didn't really matter whether they liked it or not. But, you know, so I think, I think it became obvious. And I think, you know, when they changed the number of games there, before Tavares' decision, I think that was a nod to Tavares and the rest of the team. And I fully believe that if he had signed, they'd be playing even more game. Like they would have put more money into finishing the things they need to finish in Nassau Coliseum in a quicker timeline, and they would have taken more games away from Brooklyn. So I think it's all leading towards next season being entirely in Nassau Coliseum, also the season after that, and then we'll see what happens with Belmont. But yeah, I think everybody's relieved from players down to fans. There was less than 9,000 in the building for the matinee against the Sharks last week. I think we're going to see a lot of that until they get to the Coliseum, and that's going to really push this thing to the no more Brooklyn in the near future.
Yeah, that's what we've been talking about.
I was going to ask where your annual attendance woes article was that seems like every other outlet was putting out there. Why did we get one?
I don't know if that's in the Athletics wheelhouse to start writing. I just feel like it's so obvious the reasons that no one's going to go this year to Brooklyn, that most of the fans are waiting until they get to the Coliseum. Obviously, Tavares leaving certainly has an impact in the beginning of the year until they can show that they might be a decent team. And frankly, they never draw in October outside of the opener. And if they get a Ranger game or a big team to come in, it's, you know, Florida comes in next week to Brooklyn, and that's going to in the middle of the week. Like if they were coming to the Coliseum in the middle of the week in October 4 years ago, even when the team was 18-7, it still would draw 9,000. So it's
that's something we always point out.
There's some things that have to change gradually over time, and hopefully they will. But it ain't going to.
I think
be
if you year. Added up the attendance of every Islanders Panthers regular season game in both on both Long Island and in Florida, I don't think it would be as many people as like the Jets get on a regular day. Like I just don't. It's got to be the least amount of people. Again, it's not an island, like in Florida. I mean, who you know, you get a bunch of you know expat New Yorkers that show up at a Panthers game in October, like you said, to watch them. Again, it was excluding the playoff series, obviously. But man, those games have never drawn anything. All right. Well, so last one for me, I guess, is another kind of more general thing. And I'm kind of fascinated by the whole Trotz experiment so far. So this is kind of along the same lines, but I think it was after the Nashville game again, or it might have been after practice. I forget what, but he was on a video thing and he mentioned something along the lines of like, they're still trying to like kind of get a read on guys and, you know, kind of trying to learn who's here and what they have. I mean, do you get the sense from him that this is kind of like an extended training camp in a way, and that there could be bigger changes kind of down the road? Or is this, I mean, because you've seen this team a lot and you know there haven't been a whole lot of lineup changes in that time. But I mean, these guys are different, and I wonder if like if they notice that something's not working or they're just not as deep as some other teams, forget about it, a team like Nashville, even a mediocre team, if they would make a change really quickly after they're like, okay, we know what this guy's all about, we can get rid of him, goodbye. I don't know if you see that kind of coming up in the near future.
I don't know about a wholesale change. I mean, I think when you look at some of the decisions that they've made that have been a little curious, whether it was sending Devon Toews down and keeping Spezza towards the end of training camp, or you know, sending Jan Kovac on his way to Bridgeport and now elsewhere, probably back to Russia, in favor of keeping Ross Johnston on the roster, or keeping, you know, Valtteri Filppula and guys like that. I wouldn't say that it's a complete nod to Lou and the people that he signed, but I think at the beginning of the year, Barry Trotz likes to play his veterans. And I think that really was the Spezza versus Toews situation. And you know, Filppula versus Kovac, Filppula got a no move clause. He's a known quantity. Leo Komarov got a 4-year deal. So I think for all of Trotz's independence and clearly knowing what he needs, I think he's still maybe on the fringes of the roster, exceeding to some of the wishes of his GM, at least in the short term. But I imagine that, you know, as the season goes on here, you know, guys will get hurt or the usual array of players. I think they're going to know what they have pretty quickly. And, you know, I think it's clear what they have. They have a couple of talented young guys up front and a couple of talented young guys on defense and a couple more waiting in the wings in Bridgeport, and not a lot else. So I think it's, you know, I think it's it's going to be a year of trapping and grinding and getting, trying to get good goaltending. And it's not going to be nearly as exciting as it's been in recent years, but if they win, then I guess that makes it more exciting. So it's kind of a, it's an interesting split, I think, for the fans, that they're not going to be nearly as dynamic as they've been, you know, in the last 4 years or so. But if they play defense and get goaltending, they might win a lot more games. So I think you have to kind of pick which one you're looking for. And I, obviously for Barry Trotz, it's, I'm going with the lineup that's going to win me a game, preferably 2-1 or 3-1, because we don't really want to play a 6-5 game like the way they wanted to last year. Yeah. So
and he's used to
it is interesting, and we'll see if there are any minor changes. But I don't think, you know, other than guys that are going to be free agents next year, Jordan Eberle, Brock Nelson, you know, as we get along here, when they start thinking about maybe trading guys if the season goes really bad. But I don't think that's anything in the short term.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah, I actually have a couple like Eberle to me, like, is an interesting case because he's been here for, you know, what, a year, a little over a year now to calendar wise. Like his kind of 10,000 foot picture of this franchise is so different from, you know, say like the Brock Nelsons or the Anders Lees, who are UFAs as well. Like, I just wonder like what that kind of like short term kind of look at this franchise being going from completely off the rails, dysfunctional, to now having some stability. Like, what does he actually think the Islanders are, is to me? Cause to me, like, I'm pretty sure I know what Brock Nelson and Anders Lee do. Like, this is like a quirky franchise. They're very much like us against the world. They kind of bought into that a while ago, and it's kind of what they came up with. Whereas like Eberle is a little different. He came from a team in an established market to then this team that then went through wholesale changes. So I think he's going to kind of be an interesting player just to watch in a contract year. And I wonder if how like because the Islanders are they've been very coy about like his situation. We've already heard about the Anders Lee things. I think something popped up today about it, but like I just wonder if he's just kind of going to fly under the radar until basically it's put up or shut up time. And what's he been like in through this whole process, Art, is a question I want to know about Eberle, because he seems a little quieter and stuff. And I mean, he's great. I love watching him. I think he's an awesome player, but
I think for him, anything that's not the situation he had in Edmonton is probably good. You know, I think he was, along with Taylor Hall, kind of the focus of a lot of ire of why that team could never succeed. And it really, you know, he was pretty successful for a lot of years on a team that could never get it together and looked a lot like the Islanders, and, you know, having an occasional good year and then followed by three bad ones. So, you know, I think when he came here last year, he said all the right things and clearly meshed with the right guy in Barzal. But I don't know. I don't know what his future holds. You know, I think he's kind of the wild card. He does do a lot of good things. I think, you know, the way that he played in Nashville on Saturday really energized that line that hadn't kind of done a lot the first few games. He's going to get his 50, 55, 60 points because he plays in the power play. He's a good 5-on-5 player. He drives the play pretty well. I just think he's, you know, this is what, 8th or 9th year in the league for him. If he's going to be a guy that gets that label of not a winner, I don't know where you go from here for him. You know, he already had a pretty sizable contract that he's coming off of. I don't know what kind of raise he's going to get off of that next year, whether it's with the Islanders or somewhere else, especially if Anders Lee, as it seems, will get, you know, a long-term extension to go with the captaincy. He does like the low-key part of it, that there's bigger stars and more attention getting people, but I think, you know, from a playing standpoint, you know, I think he gives you what he gives you. And I don't know if he's a guy that you want as one of your 4 or 5 high paid talented guys, or whether he needs to be on a team where he blends more into the background and kind of, you know, does what he does, but in a much more quiet way. He's definitely a bit of a question mark going forward.
I wonder if he would take less because he's already been one of those well-paid, you know, 4 or 5 highest paid stars on the team, you know. I wonder if that would work that way, but probably not.
Yeah, I don't know if he'd take less on a really untalented team like this one.
Also true.
But it was funny how that line did just all of a sudden Brock Nelson was playing well and Anders Lee is like out of nowhere. It's like, why they're doing this against a really good team. Where has this been? Hopefully it's a sign of things to come, because like going into the season, we said the Islanders had two basically first lines and then two fourth lines. And if they don't have two top six lines going, it's going to be a bit of a disaster. I wonder how long it would have taken. Like if they hadn't gotten their act together, if Trotz was going to pull the plug on the, all right, Barzal and or Eberle have to get back together because they weren't getting anything out of that second line.
Yeah, that's a difficult one, just because that Lee Nelson combo, you know, they were good together a few years ago when they were younger, but I don't know if they're enough of a force 5-on-5. And now, you know, after Nashville, I would imagine Andrew Ladd's going to get a chance to play with Barzal for a bit. You wonder if you know, if Bailey doesn't fit well with those guys, whether they switch that around, where Anthony Beauvillier fits. It's kind of, you know, they need things to go right to have some success. And obviously that you can't have the same four lines together all the way through, even for a month or two. So we'll see what they come up with this week out here and whether that can get a few guys.
That was
going.
Our first look at the Trotz line blender. So we don't have enough information yet on it, but to know where everybody's going to go. But that was the first time I was like, what, a Clutterbuck's out here with Barzal? Like it was a lot of weird people on the ice trying to get anything going against a team that, I don't know what they could have done against those guys, but, you know, could have showed up, I guess. But that first period was really awful. All right. Well, thanks again, Art. We really appreciate it. Enjoy your time out on the West Coast. We'll see you when you get back. Thanks for giving us a few minutes and your incredible insights as always. Everybody should be reading Art at The Athletic all the time. Get a subscription. Just do it. You can't be an Islanders fan without one. So just do it and read Art every day. So thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care. See you later.
Take care.
See you later, bud.
All right. So, yeah, that was great, as always. Art brings the good stuff. And, you know, it's just a fascinating. The more I kind of watch the Trotz thing, the more I kind of, like, am kind of fascinated by how he does things. He's so calm. He's like an Easter Island Moai. He's just this, like, giant head, and he's just giving out wisdom. I assume they give out wisdom if you, you know, hear the wind in their lips or something like that. But but that game, though, you know, I don't want to sound like defeatist, or I don't want to sound like, you know, you're not being hard enough on them. You got to be harder on them. Like they were probably never going to win that game in Nashville. Yeah, they could have played better. That first period was trash. They all knew it was trash. They played way better in the second period. And what was it? 3-2 after two. And, you know, you thought, hey, maybe they can pull something out here. Yep. But, I mean, just that third period was just textbook, like, these guys are way better than us, and there's not much we can do about it. I wouldn't even fault any of those five goals against on Robin Leonard. Like, I don't think he played all that poorly at all. I think he played all right. He just, you know, there was always somebody in the way and making these crazy shots. And I thought that Thomas Hickey actually had a bad game, which is hard for me to say because I really like Thomas Hickey, but it just seemed like every time something bad happened, he was on the ice. So, you know, what are you going to do? Like, it's just one of those things. They could have played better. They could have made more of a game out of it like they had at in their game against the Predators in Brooklyn. But, you know, that didn't happen. And 4 days off, what are you going to do?
Right. Yeah, it's funny because if you look at it as two games, basically, that's exactly what you'd expect the Predators and Islanders kind of to do. You know.
Well, Islanders to lose both.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. But, you know, they had their moments. But in the end, the Predators pulled away and kind of just showed, like, the gap in class between the two of them. So, if you thought the Islanders were going to do anything like above steal that game, whether like through goaltending or whatever, you're looking at everything through a rose colored visor. But, we're before the season started, if this is where you said the Islanders would be, I'd be all right. I mean, you look at the Red Wings right now, like I don't think they've won yet. They're getting blown out again. So it's things could be a lot worse than they are. And I think it's going to be a good couple of games on the West Coast, because the Ducks and the Kings kind of play a similar style to the Islanders, where they don't really generate that many shot attempts. They don't really drive play. So it's going to kind of be like, I don't think that these games are going to be pretty on the eye, but I think that you'll get a good look. Cause I think those teams are kind of, I think the Ducks, when they're healthy, are obviously a lot better than the Islanders, but like right now, I think they're kind of you know, in that maybe third tier of teams, the Kings and the Ducks maybe in that second, and the Kings are kind of near the top of the third, but the Islanders are kind of in there where if they played, you know, 100 times, the Island, you can expect the Islanders to win like 45 of them against the Kings. So yeah. I think I'm looking forward to it. I think this will be a good barometer of where the team actually is on Wednesday.
Yeah, the Ducks are one of those teams that's like, they're always a playoff team, but they're never really one you think of as a Stanley Cup contender. Now watch, they're going to go on to win a Stanley Cup this year because I said that. But they're really good. I think Ryan Getzlaff is hurt now. Is that correct? I think he might miss that game, which would be a huge deal for the Islanders for sure. But yeah, both those teams are really slow. The Ducks have been boring for years. It's really sad. The Kings, you know, I don't know if I'd call them boring, but they don't play the most exciting. I mean, Drew Doughty's exciting, but and Kopitar is great. But other than that, they play a really slow, boring style kind of too. So it should be good. And then they got a rematch with the Sharks, who are just, I don't know. One of these days, the Sharks are going to break out, and you just hope it's not against the Islanders at home on Saturday night. So we'll have to see how that works out. But, you know, like I said, I was watching that third period, and it was very evident that these were two teams on two totally different tracks. Like, you know, one of them is an elite Stanley Cup contender, and they played like it. There was not an ounce of air to be seen in any moment on the ice. The Islanders never really had much generated in that third period. Brock Nelson came within a hair of tying it. He actually beat Juuse Saros in the five hole, and the puck was just angled in such a way that it bounced off of one of the posts. So it was like he was an inch from tying the game. And that was when I was like, well, that's that. They're not going to get a better chance than that. And, you know, again, I can't be too mad about losing that game. Like it is.
And I think you could also, you take the positive that line showed up, like we were saying. And
they were really good.
It's so funny. I want one of these days I'm going to sit down and just watch all of Brock Nelson's good games and all of his bad games. And just because it's just I honestly don't know what he's doing differently. We're not if we knew, we'd be making a lot more money. Right? Right. But like you look at him, you're like, why? He looks so much better today. And I don't know why. Like, what is he doing in this game that he doesn't do in those other games where he looked really good that on Wednesday night. And he's there. And Butch was like, he's such a streaky player. And when I think of streaky players, I think of like Miro Chetan, right? And Victor Kozlov, where like they're streaky because it's all shooting streaks. It's nothing to do with like actually like their overall game. And Nelson's different because Nelson's streaks have to do everything with his overall game. It's, you know, it's not just like him getting the hot hand. I know he ends up scoring in buckets, but like, when he's going, he's like, you're like, wow, look at him. He's digging the puck out in his own net and winning it.
But it lasts one game. But the going lasts one game. I agree.
He's the most confounding player I think I've ever dealt with.
Yeah, no, I agree. He is like that. And, you know, games like that make you think, wow, man, this guy could be pretty good. And then he'll just go into a cocoon for the next. I mean, if he didn't show up for the game in Anaheim and you were like, after it was over, you know, win or lose, you're like, man, did Brock Nelson even have a shot in that game? I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. It's like that every other game. And for those of us that are older, that reminds me of Mikko Mäkelä. Like, Mikko Mäkelä was kind of the guy who always ended up, for better or worse, kind of riding shotgun with Pat LaFontaine. And some nights he was one of the better players on the ice. Like, he was fast and he could score. And, you know, he and LaFontaine were kind of a formidable duo. And then a month would go by and you'd be like, was he hurt? No, he was playing the whole time. He just didn't do anything. Stan Fischler was another one who was like, every other night with this guy. Sometimes he looks like Wayne Gretzky, and sometimes he's invisible. I don't understand. Yeah. So
it's like, it's that old crusty hockey cliche, you know, the enigmatic Russian, whereas Brock Nelson is the enigmatic Russian of Americans.
He's the enigmatic Minnesotan.
Yes, exactly.
That was the one positive. Hickey, I thought, had a bad game, which is kind of weird for him. You know, Barzal, I think, is going to have these games where he plays against elite defensive teams and he has trouble sort of generating. It's a little sad to hear that, like, Anthony Beauvillier has, you know, he's been talking with Trotz and nothing terrible or anything, but he's just trying to get things going. And again, this, like Art said, you know, Trotz has been around the block a million times and he's been through this with guys, you know, in whether in Washington or in Nashville who are super talented and just, you know, we're kind of cold and not getting it going. So I think whatever he said to Beauvillier will eventually get things going. I mean, he's going to keep playing with Barzell, I would assume, but he needs to get going at some point. But it's a little disconcerting that it's happening now. But overall, just like they've played four games, and it's just there are some teams that I feel like play every night. And it's like, how the hell is this possible? Devils fans must be feeling it even worse. Like, how the hell has our team only played two games? It's crazy.
I feel like the Senators have played 37 games already. They're on every night. It's the crazy. Stars. It's just like, yeah, I don't get it. And it's just, but it's just the NHL, man. I mean, the NHL, you know, what's funny is the NBA starts tomorrow. So the NHL had, 10 days basically where they had us, they had everybody to themselves with, the baseball regular season was over, sure. And like, I know Saturdays and Sundays, most normal people watching football, but the NHL had an opportunity to, like, you know, throw some crazy games at us, and they didn't do it because they don't.
Yeah. And now forget it with LeBron in LA and the whole thing. Forget it. They're never going to, this is probably going to set an all time low as far as NHL, like, ratings.
Yeah, we'll be
it's got
back
to.
On OLN in no time.
I know, right? Oh, I remember those days. Versus Network.
Yep. Great stuff. Oh, the best.
So, I mean, it's funny how we're talking and they've played all of one game, and we've talked about what we could talk about. There's not much left to say. They lost. So let's look ahead. They have the Ducks tomorrow, on Wednesday. The Kings on Thursday, which is a tough go. I mean, they've done it for years, so I mean, there's nothing new, but that is kind of a, like you said, the two very similar teams. They both play this sort of bruising style. They seem to get bigger every year. I don't know what they're putting in the water and the Gatorade out there, but those guys seem going to get bigger every year. And then they play the Sharks on Saturday at home, which is another, man, that's a tough one. You know, at some point they're going to bust out probably. And get things going, and you know it could come against the Islanders. They've had some horror show games out there. And then do they come back after that? Let's see. I'm calling up the schedule right now. Yeah, all right. Then like Art was saying, they play the Panthers next Wednesday at Barclay Center in front of probably triple digits. So that'll be a fun time. So it's just a very weird sort of disjointed. Oh, and then they have the Penguins the next night. Oh, great. Oh no, sorry, that's another week later. So just a very weird disjointed start, which, you know, at first is sort of like, these guys are never going to get any traction. But then again, you wonder if all the practice time under a new coach might be a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I probably should have asked Art.
Yeah, it sucks for us, but like, I'm sure that for the team, it's fine. It's a good opportunity, definitely, for them to basically pick Trotz's brain and him to implement everything. And I don't understand, too, is like, I know, obviously, there's a lot more variables at play. But yeah, so they go on this like West Coast. Like, why aren't they just knocking out the Coyotes and the Knights now? It's because after they play the Sharks, like you said, they have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday off again. So it's like it's just so frustrating.
Yeah, then they have a bunch of sort of Eastern Conference road games. So it's Philly, it's Carolina. So I don't know. And I don't know how it's going to shake out. And, you know, like we talked about last week, too. I mean, ultimately, this is not a team that has a lot of talent on it. So, you know, they need stuff to go right every single night, and it's probably not going to happen. Right. So at best, we're talking about a playoff bubble team. So, you know, but again, you wonder how this kind of schedule is going to help them or hurt them. Maybe not at all. I don't know.
It's
frustrating as a viewer.
Yeah. Sure. So I guess, so they're what, 2-2 basically. And then they'll play three games. So one out of their first seven games will be against the Eastern Conference team or something like that. It's just great. Yeah, they've already finished their season series with Nashville and San Jose before they play any, you know, the Penguins or the Flyers. So whatever. It is what it is.
It is. So let's see what else. You know what, though? You know what's kind of cool? I was just reading this wonderful Islanders prospect report from today from at 1:45 p.m. by Corey, who writes a lot of great stuff for the Islanders website. Let's see. Who was it? Ruslan Ishkakhov. He's going to be on TV this week, tomorrow night, Tuesday, ESPN Plus, UConn versus Quinnipiac. So watch that. And then Ishkakhov again on Friday will be playing UConn. We'll be playing Providence, which features Islanders 2017 pick Ben Mirages. So you get Islanders prospects on two nights of the week. Two of the nights that the Islanders are going to be off. So There you go. Islanders hockey.
Yeah.
With one guy from UConn.
Speaking of prospects, the Athletic too. You should have asked Art about this too. And Corey Pronman wrote like 100 best prospects and playing in the AHL. And I think it was Pronman, might not be, but so he put Sebastian Aho as in the top 10, which would, wow. Yeah, because you think Islanders defenseman in there, you'd assume it would be Devon Taves or whatever, but. In this whole Devon Taves thing, we completely forgot about Aho. You know, like this. Islanders have two pretty. I really liked Aho's game, and I think it's because of the way I felt about Lubomir Vyšnovský, and it's they remind me a little bit of each other. Even though I think Aho physically looks like a blonde Jaromír Jágr, his game reminds me of Vyšnovský a little bit, maybe without the shot, but. They're small. They move the puck and like very shifty, getting in and out of like these small areas. I think Vyšnovský could skate through, the grate in a freaking shopping cart if you needed to. But the two of them, I think, really reminded me of each other. And I think that's like another thing with like the Spezza stuff and whatever. Like when these guys are at the point, I don't think anybody would argue that Devon Taves is basically he's done with his education in the AHL. Like he's ready. They're just whatever happens with him, whether it's an injury or they decide to just nip it in the bud with someone. And then Aho is like right behind him too. So I really wonder like when those two guys and how much we're going to see of them in the early going. If Spezza does crack the lineup again, how long is it going to take? Like what kind of leash is he on? But that's like another like we always say like yeah this season probably isn't going to go great, but there are really some nice things to look forward to depth wise and they have the right guys kind of handling the scenario.
Well, one guy we know who didn't forget about Sebastian Aho is Spizwolf, who writes for Lighthouse Hockey, the president and treasurer and secretary of the Sebastian Aho fan club. So he definitely did not forget about Sebastian Aho. I absolutely forgot about Sebastian Aho, and I'm totally right where you are, where like, oh, yeah, it's just because he wasn't mentioned at all during camp. And, he went down in that sort of like post, camp waiver thing, and there's like a million names on the list. You totally forgot about him. But, yeah, he definitely showed a lot of signs last year. He's got one assist so far in four games. Taves has three assists, so he's a little bit. And Michael Dacol is actually leading the Sound Tigers in points with one goal and four assists. And now I'm kind of wondering, as you talk about, the guys kind of ready to graduate to the NHL. I'm kind of wondering, this isn't going to happen. And this would require lots and lots of. Probably bad luck and bad feelings and all kinds of stuff. But like, if you had a defensive setup of Pellick and Pullock, and then Hickey and Mayfield, and then Taves and Aho. I mean, was that better or worse than what they have now? I love Johnny Boychuk dearly, and he brings so much, and he's just a great person, and I love him. But eventually that. They're going to need to make a decision on him, and he might end up being, the sixth guy on the team. And then, somebody like an Aho or a Taves can slide in there, or maybe both of them. And, with Pellick and Mayfield, we've talked about it. They both got kind of long extensions. They're pretty cheap. They could be waived. Maybe they could be traded. I don't know. But the future is definitely in Taves and Aho. And it makes you wonder about the present with guys like Pellick and Mayfield who aren't bad players. They're not as dynamic, especially on the offensive end, as these other two guys. And, it's tough because we want the Sound Tigers. If the Sound Tigers were really good, then it would be different. Like, you'd almost be like, well, they're really kicking ass down there. So I guess it's worth keeping them down there. Maybe they win a Calder Cup, but they're not that good. Like, at least, again, in the early going, things haven't been all that great. And the team up here isn't all that great. So you figure if they can make one good team out of those guys, that would be perfect, but doesn't really work that way. This is me, by the way, not knowing how hockey operations work, as that guy told us in that review a while back. It doesn't really work that way, but I'm just kind of spitballing here. But yeah, I mean, Aho and Taves are good players, and they hopefully should get a shot soon enough to maybe juice the lineup for the big club.
Yeah, I think they would. And I mean, we know what the logic and like the company line is, that they don't want them sitting in the press box, which would also drive us nuts. So,
Right. Yeah. No, we wouldn't want that either. Yeah.
But,
this is also why I probably couldn't be an AHL fan full time, is because, man, they played I guess Friday and Sunday, or maybe Saturday and Sunday, and now they're off again until next Sunday. So man, they're off again until Friday, and then they play Friday and Saturday and Sunday, and then they're off again until the next Saturday. So yeah, I can't do that. I don't know what those guys do with that. Play Fortnite.
It's just insane that they play three games in a row. It's wild. Yeah. What a weird minor league that is.
It's been around so long. It's one of those things. It's like, it's been going so long, I don't think they can do anything about it. It just is what it is. Like, this is the way we've always done it. Oh, okay. Well, that's how it's done, I guess. So that's that. All right. So, I mean, with one game in the books, there's not much to talk about. We talked about those West Coast games. Definitely stay up till 10 o'clock and watch After Hours with Brendan and Butch and Shannon, and that'll be a good time. Again, you could watch Ruslan Ishkakhov Tuesday and Friday on ESPN2. That'd be pretty cool. Watch some college hockey. Let's see.
Oh, you know, did I forget anything? You know what else happened today, which was kind of funny, was Eamon McAdam was the emergency goalie for the Leafs. So, yeah, that's really all I have to say. But
yeah, good luck with that. I'm sure he'll shut out. I'm sure he'll get a shutout. He'll be called into action because Freddie Anderson's hurt.
Yes.
So I guess I don't know who the backup is. I guess Garrett Sparks. So he's going to get hurt, or his wife is going to go into labor, or his car is going to break down or something. And Eamon McAdam is going to play, and the Leafs are going to win 8-1. And we're going to have to hear about how, you know, the Islanders have gifted the Leafs a Stanley Cup. That's exactly what's going to happen. It might be happening now as we speak.
Looking forward to it.
Again, stay off Twitter. I promise you, your life will be better for it. I promise. Let's see. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, there wasn't much in the way of hockey news today. Marco Dano, one of my favorite names, got picked up on waivers by Colorado today. That was it. That was all I saw.
I was shocked at the very light outrage. There was really no outrage, that not just from Islanders fans, but from anyone. They're like, oh, I can't believe we're not picking up Marco Dano if we're playing, you know, Derek McKenzie 10 minutes a game. So,
yeah, I don't know. Maybe the ship has sailed on him. Let's hope so. You know, eventually those guys, they get the because they come in with such high. The only reason I know who he is because he came in with like a high draft pedigree.
Yeah.
And he's got a great name.
Right.
And then he got traded and the whole thing.
It's like the Cody Franzen conundrum every 3 months.
Yeah. Or Jack Skilly was another one. Why are we picking up Jack Skilly? We can use this guy. Yeah. Okay.
Sure. The Islanders had Jack Skilly for a couple minutes, didn't they? I don't know.
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah, it was good.
That's right.
And then he was gone.
I can't believe we had Jack Skilly.
I mean, he's almost the perfect, like, he fits right in with those kind of gonzo, bizarre Islanders of yore.
Yep.
The Mike Yorks that we were talking about last week. And, you know, the guy's like, oh, right, yeah, they were Islanders. J.J. Daigneau for me is another one. Oh, yeah, right, he was an Islander, J.J. Daigneau.
Yeah, and I remember I was watching the Flyers put up a video because they were using that same Mac Miller song for their like their victory song that they used during the 24/7s. And I was like, damn, those 24/7 shows on HBO. Like, I mean, I still watch the boxing, not anymore because HBO is giving up boxing. Mm-hmm. But the Penguins with Capitals one was so good. And because that was like in the beginning of the, you know, we're actually going to lift the curtain so you can see behind it. And the Flyers Ranger one was all right, even though it was the Rangers. But I remember, so they were like showing the locker room video of them like coming in during that year. And Harry Zolnerchuk was there.
Yeah.
So
another one. Yeah. Well, yeah. The greatest moment of any of those things was obviously, everybody knows where I'm going with this. The year that the Leafs and Red Wings played in the Winter Classic, and the Red Wings lost a game to the Islanders that like they never should have lost. And HBO quit, like with the Liev Schreiber overdub, like it sounded like, you know, the worst thing in the world. Like it was like Saving Private Ryan and they were all getting slaughtered on the beach or something like that. That was the one where like Drew Miller was going at Martin, and Martin's like, you spend more time in the minors than I did, you dumbass. Go dye your hair again. And that was the greatest. That's the greatest moment in any of those.
Yeah, I was happy they got their due that year, because the first year with the Penguins, the Islanders like ended their winning streak or their point streak or Sidney Crosby's point streak, I think it was, and the Islanders wanted a shootout. DiPietro played. And it was when he like skated out to the Islanders were, it was December and the Islanders were already out of the playoffs, but DiPietro like skated out to the to center ice to like join the fray and like knocked over Travis Hamonic celebrating like they just won the cup. And like I was at the game and I was really excited because I was like, dang, maybe HBO will, you know, do that. But I was also really embarrassed that DiPietro did that. I was like, dude, we just won. That game just ended probably an 11 game losing streak.
Oh, right. But they never mentioned it.
No, they
didn't. I think I remember.
Yeah, they
this.
Didn't. They didn't. Yeah. They just kind of glossed there. And Sidney Crosby's historic point streak came to an end against some team. It's not that important.
I hope we're not confusing any of these with the NHL NBCSN thing, because they had that one too. That was the one the Islanders were on, right? Like that was because they did one before the Rangers game. And then like we saw that was the one with like Kyle Okposo and that was the one where like we saw Tavares like praying to the altar of Mike Bossy or
I
think that was an NBC.
Yeah, that was the NBC one. Yeah, and then and I think I told the story earlier in the year, so stop me if I did, about how the NHL network played the NHL All Access from 2002 at like 2 a.m. and it was the Islanders 2001-2002 team.
Oh god.
Did I tell this story already?
No.
Yes.
No.
So like
can I buy that on DVD?
I have it permanently DVR'd. So a lot of times, like if I'm like, not like my mind's racing, I can't fall asleep, I pop it on and just like watch Sean Bates, Steve Webb, and Eric Cairns. They're like and Mark Parrish. They all lived in the same house. And yeah, it's great. I mean, it's hysterical to see these guys like, I mean, it was on. I was watching MLB Network and I flipped to one channel up and that's the NHL network. And I like flipped quickly back and forth. And I was like, wait a minute. That looked like Eric Cairns.
Yeah.
And so I flipped back up. I'm like, holy crap. There's no way they're actually showing this. And then they were showing it again 3 hours later. So I set up the DVR for it.
You got to somehow extract that from your DVR.
I just said,
put it on like a USB stick or something and just send it to me. I don't know how, but that's awesome. I had no idea. I don't have NHL network. I don't have Game Center anymore either, but that's awesome. I didn't even know they did that.
I didn't either. I mean, it was amazing. Like, so yeah, maybe I'll just like put my cell phone in front of it or something and just record it.
The Devils did like an all access thing at training camp this year because they were in Europe. And I mean, that would be awesome. I would love to see that stuff. And the Islanders are never going to do that with Lou in charge. Maybe when they move to Belmont and, you know, maybe if the owners maybe put enough pressure on Lou or something, they would. But with Lou, that's never going to happen. But I just like to see that stuff. I mean, it would be cool to kind of see where they live. I enjoyed seeing the MSG stuff with, like, you know, Barzell driving around Long Island, getting lost, living with the Seidenbergs, like playing games with his kids. Like, I love that kind of stuff. It's fun. You know, you want to see that kind of stuff. And it makes them human. And that's why I hate to keep bringing this up, but, like, you know, when you're on hockey Twitter, it's like everybody's trash. You know, everybody, oh, this guy's trash. Oh, his you know, he's got a minus 1.2 relative Corsi last year. He's garbage. They got to get rid of him. Like, they're people, you know? I mean, Dennis Seidenberg, he's not helpful to the Islanders on the ice, but I enjoyed watching his adventures with young Matthew Barzell living in his house and playing games with his kids.
Yeah.
Like, that's fun to me, you know? And I could separate I don't really want this guy on the ice with my team, but this is kind of a cool thing to watch. And, like, you're sitting at the dinner table with the wife and the kids and everything, and it's kind of funny. I just like seeing that stuff. I wish we saw more of it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think in this day of like complete data, like it's just like if you liked this guy and he sucks, like I mean I used to love Andy Hilbert and he sucked, but I liked Andy Hilbert because he was Andy Hilbert, like whatever.
So that's all you need to know. There you go. Yeah, no, I like that. Okay, cool. Well, again, thanks everybody for coming on with us again. It's a little weird to talk a few days later, but it's nice. It's good that we can talk again this early. I just wish the Islanders had more than one game in between, but there we are. We don't make the schedule, unfortunately. Obviously, we don't.
Join us next week for the 4-game losing streak edition.
Of course, yes. That'll be like old times.
Yes.
It'll be just like a normal show for us. My movie pick of the week, I saw Venom today. That is not my movie pick of the week. It wasn't that good. It wasn't nearly as bad as some of the reviews made it out to be. It was just sort of there. The special effects I thought were terrible, and it was incredibly stupid, but it was entertaining for what it was. If you want to watch a better Tom Hardy movie and you somehow missed it when it was out, you should definitely watch Mad Max Fury Road, which is one of the greatest action films of recent vintage and possibly of all time. All the effects are practical. Those are real trucks blowing up. That's real gasoline launching out plumes of fire everywhere. It is awesome. It is really, really great. And you got a lot of time to watch movies, so you can't go wrong with some old Mad Max Fury Road. It's on Vudu. I got it real cheap. So can you watch it. There you go.
Yeah, so I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah. Oh, that's a great movie.
I don't know. I've tried to.
And he's got like 10 lines of dialogue in the whole movie, but they're all, I mean, it's really more about Charlize Theron's character and the women that are kind of escaping the bad guy and Morton Joe. But I read all the great reviews and I'm like, all right, well, we'll see. And me and my two friends left that place, like our ears literally in the back of our head. Like we were just blown away how awesome that was. And they have a black and white version too, that is supposed to be really cool. It's the same thing only in black and white. And it sounds kind of silly, but it's supposed to be even better than the full color version. But watch a full color version, I promise. I'll trade you. I'll find a way to, I'll give you my Vudu password. You can log in, watch that, and you send me the Islanders 2001 behind the scenes video.
Yeah, I got
equally as entertaining.
I really got to find a way to get that. It's got to be a way.
I'm going to scan the internets for that. Another thing you should do while you have the time, whether you're on lunch or something like that, won't take you too long. You may have already, but on Friday, our friend Stan Fischler wrote another one of his Islanders memories pieces. He writes them every week. Obviously, you should be reading them all, but this one, I loved it. I thought it was great. I actually wrote Stan an email and told him how much I loved it. It was about Al Arbour and how he came to the Islanders, and we don't really hear that much. You know, we all know what he did while he was with the Islanders, but this talks about his upbringing and, you know, how he was working in like a steel mill or something like that when he got the kind of things that happen to players in the 50s. You know, they were working in a steel mill and then they end up playing for the Detroit Red Wings, and how he bounced around and kind of, you know, he found success everywhere, but for whatever reason, he kept being moved. And, you know, he played a couple of years in the AHL after he had won like two Stanley Cups. And then he won a third as kind of part of the over the hill gang with the Leafs, and then he, you know, captained the Blues for a while, and it was all fascinating stuff that we don't really hear that much, you know, like we don't get that aspect of the Arbour story that often. And so it was a really cool change of pace. And, you know, again, we all know what he did with the Islanders. We've been over that, and it's all wonderful, and we can read it every day, but this is a little bit different. Also, whenever Stan tells the story about Al having to chase his car across like the tarmac at Republic Airport, it's still funny, and I still wish that's the kind of thing I wish was on a behind the scenes video of Al Arbour chasing his like whatever it was AMC Pacer down the runway as it's heading for a plane in like 1979. That was probably awesome.
Yeah, he's Stan's got a ton of crazy story, and I'm happy they're kind of committing to like an NHL history piece, but from Stan, which is nice, yeah. Which is something we've always told him to kind of do. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see what else he digs up.
Yeah. Nobody knows more about that stuff. I told him that the only problem I had with that Arbour piece is that I was thinking about writing the exact same thing for a series about like Islanders coaches. And obviously his is going to be infinitely better than mine. So that idea is out the window, and it's back to the drawing board for me, but I'll figure something out, I guess. But yeah, so you should check it out. I forget what it was called, but I think it was like Arbour's Beginnings or something, but it was from last Friday. And, you know, again, you should be reading those official pieces every week anyway, because they're awesome. You know, it's a little slice of heaven for you just before the weekend. All right, I guess that's it.
Yeah.
Anything else? Yeah.
No, that's this was yeah. Good. It was. It was definitely like all day. I was just like, they really only played one game, so I'm happy that we were still able to stretch it out.
Yeah. No, it's good. Well, I mean, Art's here and he's always giving us great stuff.
Yes, that's true.
We appreciate him again. Thanks a lot for taking some time. I mean, if I was on the West Coast, I'd be like, F you guys. I'm going surfing, or I'm going to go eat at Spago or something like that. But I asked him and he came on. So we appreciate that always. We'll hook up with him again later on in the season. Why don't you tell everybody your Twitter account again?
It's the Big Lebowski with two E's.
Make sure you follow Mike at the Big Lebowski with two E's on Twitter. Make sure you read Lighthouse Hockey every day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Yes, finally, I got it right. 5 episodes into the season. So you should be doing that every day. There's great stuff. Jay Bott's doing stuff from Bridgeport. That's awesome. We've never had that. And I've been wanting somebody to do that for a long time. So thank you very much for doing that. That's great stuff. You know, any kind of updates we can get from there are great. I mean, obviously, Michael Fornabio is great. But these are just on top of that, too. Kind of a different point of view. It's nice to see. So read those as well. Thank you very much. We'll be back next week where the Islanders play – three whole games. Let's see if they can handle it. Three whole games in a week. Let's see what happens next. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.